Okay, translation.
How is it possible for Shishupala and Dantavatra, in the presence of many exalted persons, to enter very easily into the body of Krishna, whose nature is difficult to attain? So purport by his divine grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Shishupala and Dantavakra were formerly Jai and Vijay, the doorkeepers of Vaikuntha. Merging into the body of Krishna was not their final destination. For some time they remained merged, and later they received the liberations of Sarupya and Salokya, living on the same planet as the Lord in the same bodily form. Of course, Sarupya means the same form, yeah. The Shastras give evidence that if one blasphemes the Supreme Lord, his punishment is to remain in hellish life for many millions of years, more than one suffers by killing many Brahmins. Phew. Shishupala, however, instead of entering hellish life, immediately and very easily received Sayuja Mukti. That such a privilege had been offered to Shishupala was not merely a story. Everyone saw it happen. There was no scarcity of evidence. How did it happen? Maharaj Yudhisthira was very much surprised. So, katam tasmin bhagavati duravagraya domini pashatam sarvalokanam vayam iyatur anjasa. So, omganat jivadandasha yananjana shlakaya chakshur unmeditam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha. So, this chapter in the Bhagavatam is entitled "The Supreme Lord is Equal to Everyone," and that is very similar to a verse in the Bhagavad Gita that some of you may be familiar with: "Samoham sarvabhuteshu name dvesho stina priyaha," which is really interesting. He says, "Samoham, equipoise, I am sarvabhuteshu, all living entities." Nami dvesha, I have no enemies. And priya, I have no special friends. People are especially dear to me. That's interesting, isn't it? So then you may ask, why are the gopis very dear to Krishna? If Krishna is saying he has no friends, no enemies, what about the coward boys? They're his friends, aren't they? It's interesting, isn't it? Krishna says, Ami dvesho nima na priha. I have no friends and no enemies, but you look at the Vrindavan pastimes and Krishna has all sorts of friends. And he has a few enemies too. So many different demons, Gasura, Pralambasura, Putana, all these different demons. So this can be explained, that inherently, of course that's a big word, I have to explain what that means. That means by nature, no one is especially favored by Krishna. By nature, everyone has an equal opportunity to be Krishna conscious. As Krishna says in the Gita, the fourth chapter, Yayata mam prapajante tam sadaiva bhajamiham. So as one approaches me, this word, Bajami, the root of the word is Baj, which basically means to worship or to approach, because just like we have Bhakti, isn't it? Bhajan, all these different words come from the same root. So, as someone approaches me, I just reciprocate with them. In other words, that's the equality of Krishna. He's not saying ultimately he has no friends, or ultimately there's nobody who's his enemy. But he gives everyone an equal opportunity. That's the point. That nobody is by nature, of course everyone's by nature Krishna Das, but by nature Krishna is not going to treat people differently. It's everyone's responsibility how they get treated by Krishna. Think about that for a second. That puts the responsibility on you rather than Krishna. In other words, don't blame Krishna for anything. It's all your fault. Usually, When something good happens to us, we take the credit. When something bad happens to us, we blame Krishna. Why did God do this to me? And if something good happens, I make a lot of money, well, I was intelligent. I was intelligent, you know, and I did the right, made the right choices and everything like that. So really everything's based on reciprocation with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now, it's also very interesting about these particular demons that are mentioned here. So why are they getting some special mercy? Of course, in one sense, these pastimes illustrate to people that Krishna loves the demons too. It's not like the Judaic Christian religions, where you have God who hates some people. For example, many people think that if you join, outside of the ISKCON movement, you join the Hare Krishna movement, you're the devil and you're going to fry in hell forever. Right? You ever see, people ever say that to you? You're going to fry in hell. Hellfire and brimstone. And of course God in the Bible and in the Quran is depicted as very jealous, envious, angry. So this is actually a replica of where the Western religions come from, which is from Greek and Roman culture. Now if you look at, let's say Roman culture, they had these demigods, which actually they got from Vedic culture. You know, they had like Zeus. You've heard of these things before? No. Some of you may have heard about this before if you studied in school. But they have the what's called Greek mythology, where they have a fire god, they have a wind god, where they have a lightning god. Of course, that's Indra, who in the Greek and Roman is the Zeus, or Thor. You heard the word Thor? They even have a movie about it nowadays. You've seen that movie? Oh, no, you're in real Maya. I have not seen that. So anyway, so they have all these Greek mythological gods, and they actually, they're all replicas of the Vedic demigods. And these gods are basically fighting each other, hating each other, coming down to the earth planet like Indra does, and doing things with Brahmins' wives or people's wives. And so you find in the Judaic Christian religion a lot of the rituals, understandings, philosophy is a remnant of that particular culture. For example, I mean, even the holidays that they celebrate. So just like you have Christmas, right? But really, Jesus Christ did not appear at Christmas time. That may come as a shock to you. The reason Christmas was chosen as his appearance time was that that was like the winter solstice. You understand? That's when the sun reaches, well, at least in the northern hemisphere. I know it's different here. Here you should be celebrating Christmas in like in August or July or something like that. Well, actually, no, June, to be precise, because that's when you have your solstice. You understand? Does everyone know what a solstice is? No. Solstice means when the shortest day of the year. The shortest day of the year, because when the earth is moving and the sun is there, you know, depending on your particular perspective, the days of the year become shorter or longer. Just like here, right now, your days are actually becoming shorter, a little shorter every day, because you're getting into the winter time, right? Whereas in the northern hemisphere, the days are actually becoming longer right now. And when the days become the longest, that's sometime in the northern hemisphere, it's sometime in June. And when the days become the shortest in the northern hemisphere, that's around December 23rd to 25th. Think about it. So that was actually a Greek holiday, Roman holiday. And so that's why they picked Christmas to be on that day. They were trying to, you know, they were trying to Christianize the Roman holidays. It's interesting, isn't it? And Easter is the same thing. Easter is the spring, what we call equinox. That means when the day and the night are equal in the northern hemisphere. So that's why Easter and spring, Easter is picked at that particular time. It doesn't mean it happened the past times. I mean, Lord Jesus Christ is a pure devotee. We have no disrespect for him. We worship him. He's like our spiritual master. But try to understand how different religious understandings came about due to the culture in which they appeared. It's a very important point. So, therefore, with these Greek Roman gods, they were continually fighting with each other and they hated people, you know. And they were partial like that. So that's why in Christianity you have this whole like partiality, and even in the Old Testament too. You have God favoring particular people because they're of a particular race. Like in the Old Testament, you have the Jews, of course, who are considered the chosen people. You've heard about this before? Yeah. Yeah. A little religious history so you know things. And because of that, God pretty much killed everybody else who wasn't of the same genetic strain. When the Jewish people left Egypt and they went to what's called the Promised Land. You've heard about that before? Some of you studied religion. They went to the Promised Land when they left Egypt. Then, guess what happened? God told them to kill every man, woman, child, and animal in every village they went through. Pretty bad God, isn't it? Not my God. Because, why do we say that? Because Krishna, in addition to being equal to everyone, he says, Sarva yoni shukantiya, murtiya sambhavantiya, aham bija pradapita. He says, I am the seed-giving, I'm everyone's father. And there's even other verses where Krishna says, I'm the father and the mother. So, does a father or a mother, apart from Kali Yuga, but does a father and mother kill children or hate their children? Kali Yuga, it's a different thing. You know, they have abortion, they have all sorts of nonsense things because of lust. But normally, does a good father, no. A good father loves his children. So he's not going to just hate someone. He's going to, if he punishes, it's to rectify. In other words, to correct. That's called, in legal terms, that's called restorative justice. You know, to restore someone to the proper situation. So that's Krishna's mentality when he punishes. If someone blasphemes him, I mean, because he feels bad about it, because he has feelings, he's God, I mean, he's a person. But if someone blasphemes him, he's not thinking, let me destroy this person. We do that, like if someone criticizes us, isn't it? Let me get even with him. And then you become so happy when you see him suffer. He offended me. You know, let's say you're a devotee, you curse someone, you offended me, and then he gets a dengue and say, ha ha. Because you committed a mad elephant offense against me. It makes us happy to see other people who attack us suffer, doesn't it? Somehow or other, it makes us feel better about ourselves. It helps our false ego. But Krishna doesn't have, isn't it? Makes us feel, yeah, I'm actually a good devotee because Krishna's punishing this person. Isn't it? So, but Krishna doesn't have that false ego. He just loves everybody. Even though he has no special friends, name dvesho stinapriha, he still loves everybody like anything because everyone is his mother, is his son, daughter, including the animals. Everyone. He's not discriminating. I'm just like I was in Australia. And it's interesting how they discriminate between different species of life. I was talking to one of my disciples who goes out in the bush, that means the outback, and he comes in contact with snakes. In Australia, there's many dangerous snakes, right? Like the brown snake and everything that kill you immediately. And I said, what happens when you come in contact with a snake? Do you kill it? I said, no, we'll get arrested if we kill the snake. I said, you get arrested? It's against the law to kill a snake that can kill you? He said, yes, their snakes are protected. And I said, what happens if you kill a cow? Oh, very nice. The government will like it very much. They'll come over and eat with you. You can invite the PM to come take prasad. It wasn't that prasad. You can invite him to come take karma with you. So it's just crazy. But Krishna sees all of the down to the instinct. Yes, Chandra Gopa, Matvendra, host of karma. From Indra Gopa, the tiniest germ, insect, microscopic creature, all the way up to Indra, or Lord Brahma. He sees them all with great love. He's their father. Of course, that also means because we are their brothers or sisters, we should also see everyone with great love, right? We should also have no enemies. Ajata Shatrava Ashanta Sadhava Sadhabhushana. That's a quality listed by Lord Kapiladeva of a Vaishnava or Vaishnavi. One who hates no one. What does it mean to have someone as an enemy? It means you hate them. Think about it for a second. I'm sure some of you, or most of you, or maybe all of you have people you hate, right? Go down the list. I hate that person. That means you're not acting as a Vaishnava. Nabe drishos dinapriha, and then of course, yastu sarvani bhutani atman eva upashati sarvabhuteshu chatmanam tatona vigigupshate. Okay, so that equality or that love for all living entities has to be reflected in us because we're Krishna's parts and parcels. So that's another point. Another point is that here you see some demons, they actually get some special mercy. I mean, I've been in the Krishna consciousness movement for so many years, it looks like Shishupala and Dantavakra got more mercy than me. If you, you know, what am I doing wrong? Maybe I should just start blaspheming the deities or, right? I mean, look at me, I'm not even liberated and they got liberation. And then even you compare it to someone like Putana, who tried to kill God. And she even got more mercy than them. She became Krishna's mother in the spiritual realm, in Goloka Vrindavan. So what's going on here? It says Krishna's equal, but he's giving some people some special mercy, and the rest of us are just having to chant Hare Krishna for so many years. And you know, we're getting old. And then, you know, God knows if we go back to Godhead, probably take birth in Fiji in the next life. Because, you know, all the disciples are in Fiji and most of them are rascals, so I have to come back to Fiji. So, so I mean, what's happening? I mean, Putana gets more mercy than me. So you can say, all right, this proves Krishna is not equal. He has some special favorites. No. If you examine why specific demons got specific mercy, you'll see there's a reason for it. It's not that, you know, any old demon approaches Krishna and gets mercy. I mean, for example, the one time there was any old demon, you know, just like a regular demon, who approached Krishna and he didn't get mercy by getting liberated. And that was Kalyavana. You know the story of Kalyavana? Kalyavana, he was a Yavana. Yavana means like low class person. And Kalyavana was attacking Krishna. And Krishna thought, you know, he doesn't get any special mercy. I gotta have someone else kill him. So Krishna was running away from this demon. And, he ran into a cave. And in that cave, there was one of Krishna's devotees, named Muchu Kunda. Not Muchi Kunda. Muchi Kunda would mean a dirty lake in Sanskrit. So most of the devotees mispronounce that name. Muchi Kunda. It's Muchu Kunda. Muchu Kunda. So Muchu Kunda, he was a great personality, had previously fought for the demigods And he had gotten the benediction from the demigods that he could sleep because he was tired after fighting for so many years. And that nobody should disturb him, and if anyone disturbed him, that person would get burnt to ashes. That reminds me of a funny story Srila Gurudev told. I mean, it has nothing to do with it, I'll just tell the story. He said, once upon a time, he was taking rest outside of Prabhupada's quarters in Sridhar Mayapur. There was a hut. And, you know, someone wakes you up in the middle of the night, you get angry with him, right? So all of a sudden, in the middle of the night, he felt someone kick him really hard. And he was thinking, getting angry. And then he looked up and it was Prabhupada. And Prabhupada, it's a funny story, I told the story the other day, I think. And he said, Prabhupada. And Prabhupada said, someone is snoring. And Srila Gurudev said, let me find the person who is snoring. And Prabhupada said, you were snoring. And he said, I didn't hear myself snore. And Prabhupada said, because you were sleeping. So anyway, to get kicked by a pure devotee is pretty good. I wouldn't mind that. I'd do anything to get kicked by Prabhupada in the same way. But anyway, so getting back to the story. So Muchukunda, he had the benediction that whoever woke him up would get burnt to ashes, you know, if he just looked at him. And so Krishna arranged that when he entered the cave, Krishna hid in the corner of the cave, and Muchukunda was covered by his blanket, so nobody could tell it wasn't Krishna. So Kalyavana came in, and he saw, and he thought that Krishna was sleeping. He was tired, or he was hiding under the covers. And then he kicked Muchukunda. And Muchukunda woke up, and Kalyavana got an instant cremation. Didn't even have to go to the cremation area here in Fiji. Instant. Just ashes was left. So there's an instance where someone wanted to attack Krishna, and they didn't get killed by Krishna, didn't get liberated because they were not worthy. So there's something very special about the demons who get killed, liberated by Krishna. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur and also Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur talk about many of these demons' histories. You know, why did they get that special mercy? You know, why did get... Let's take Putana, for example. Why did Putana get that special mercy? Well, in her previous life, she was the sister of Bali Maharaj. Bali Maharaj, of course, was Pallad Maharaj's grandson, and he had taken over the whole universe, taken Indra out of the heavenly planets, and Lord Vamana came to try to take everything back. So Lord Vamana was a little Brahmin, cute little boy. Children are generally cute. When people get older, they're no longer cute. Then the cuteness goes away. No one has ever smelled my head in the last 60 years. But with little children, you smell their head, isn't it? Parents smell their head. They pat them on the head. They go like this. Isn't it? But nobody's done that to me. So, but please don't. I would not appreciate it. So Lord Vamanadeva walks in. It's interesting also in the spiritual world. Everyone's young, so they're always cute and wonderful. You know, you look at children, and like everybody's like that in the spiritual world, just like youthful. Navayovanamcha. And they're all like cute, beautiful, you know, no imperfections and everything like that. So Lord Vamana walks in, and the first thing that Bali Maharaj's sister thinks is that, wow, she feels a maternal affection towards him. She says, wow, oh, I'd love to be his mother. And so basically she starts praying, you know, I'd like to be his mother, I'd like to be his mother. And then Lord Vamanadeva does his tricky stuff. He takes everything away from Bali Maharaj. You know, takes one step, two steps, three steps, Finally, there's no place to push the third step except for Bali Maharaj's head. He pushes him down all the way to Pataloka. And naturally, the sister becomes very upset because her brother has been abused by God. So, I mean, that's natural affection, isn't it? Between family members. And she says, I may be his mother in the future because I prayed like that, but I want to kill him. So it actually was a mixed type of devotion. So because she had that history, therefore she got that special mercy because she had prayed before with great intensity to have Krishna as her son. And that's why she went back to the spiritual world. So there's a history behind each and every demon. And if you're interested, you can read. I have a whole course I give on the demons, who the demons were, what they did, why they got that benediction, and also what the demons represented. The demons represent a particular anartha. Anartha means something you don't want. So like Putana represents the bogus guru. You understand? She looks beautiful, but she's a demon. A demoness. So, anyway, there's that case. And of course, in the case mentioned here, the two cases mentioned here, Shishupala and Dantavakra, this was all pastime of the Lord. It's not something to be unexpected because they were previously Jaya and Vijaya. And before that, they were Ravana and Kumbhakarna. Right? Kumbhakarna, which means that the ear like a pot. You know, pot ears. Did you understand? Kumbhakarna. Like his ears were just like big, pot-like. And he was a giant. And of course, Ravana, who had kidnapped Sita Devi. It's very, very interesting. You know, Ravana kidnapping Sita Devi. And it's also another interesting thing about Shishupal. It's very interesting. You remember the story of Rukmini? Rukmini? Anyone knows who Rukmini is? Krishna's first wife. And Rukmi, her brother, was arranging what? Marriage with Shishupala. So Shishupala in his past life was Ravana who... Think about it. I mean, just think about this. I just realized this the other day. Ravana who tried to take Sita Devi away. So in the next life, he almost got Sita Devi again. Isn't it? Think about it. The parallels there. Did you ever think about that before? It's interesting. So he was hankering after Sita Devi even in Shishupal. Sita Devi, of course, is Rukmini. Very, very interesting. If you see the same personality being there. Anyway, so the point I'm making is that Krishna is equal to everyone. We have equal opportunity to advance in Krishna consciousness. If you are more advanced than me, it's because you decided to become more advanced out of your free will. And if I'm less advanced, it's my responsibility. So the main thing I want to leave you with is to take responsibility for your own spiritual life. You have a taste for hearing and chanting because of what you've done, your desire, and you don't have it. Someone else doesn't have a taste because of their desire, their free will. And you can become Krishna conscious in one instant, or you can become Krishna conscious in 10 million lifetimes. It's your decision, not special mercy. Oh, Gurudev, give me your special mercy. Special mercy means instructions. And it's up to you whether or not to follow those instructions. And if you want special mercy, okay, the way to get that is to preach Krishna consciousness. Because Krishna says in the Gita, no one is more dear to me than he or she who explains this science to others. Why is that? Because the same reason that everyone is Krishna's son and daughter. And if, let's say, if someone's son or daughter has been lost. I mean, recently, for example, there was a Malaysian airplane that got lost. And sometimes there's mothers, obviously, of everybody on the plane, and Chinese people, and they're crying, they're in complete anxiety, isn't it? In fact, they're practically want to attack the Malaysian government, they're making accusations against the Malaysian government. They're just like praying that their child or their son or whatever is found. I mean, this is one of the main news today is practically this plane that has been lost. So in the same way, we are lost, and all of us are lost in this material world, and Krishna is in anxiety about us. And in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, that's brought out very nicely, where Krishna becomes the guru of Gopakumar. Jayanta is his name, the guru. Krishna personally becomes the guru. And Krishna, when Gopakumar finally comes back to the spiritual world, to Goloka Vrindavan, Krishna faints in ecstasy, just like a parent. So if you bring the child back to the parent, you know, like Krishna did with his guru, right? And Krishna also did with his mother, Devaki. I mean, can you imagine how much the parent will love you? Some of you are parents, some of you have children. Isn't it? I mean, if your child or son or daughter is lost for 20 years and somehow or other, you know, I come and I say, you know, Jivanath, here's your son back again. Here's Sanatan. So, then you're just, oh, wow, what do you want, Maharaj? Anything you want, I'll give you. You can take my house, everything you want. I mean, you'll be so grateful, isn't it? So the same way, that's Krishna's psychology. Krishna is so grateful. If we want special mercy, we want Krishna to be very grateful. And that's also equal because Krishna gives everyone the opportunity. He's so grateful when we bring someone back to him. So Prabhupada's intention was to bring the whole world back to Krishna. And if you join this Krishna consciousness movement, then, and you take part in it, and you participate in any small way, you'll become very dear to Krishna because of that. You're helping Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada said anyone who manages the Sankirtan movement, anyone who participates in the Sankirtan movement becomes very dear to Krishna. And if you go outside and you simply try to become Krishna conscious, chanting 64 or 192 rounds in Vrindavan, that's a very hard process. Very hard process. Much easier to bring people to Krishna. Like that story of Srila Gurudev, when Prabhupada wanted to bring him back to India, he brought all these souls that he had made devotees in front of Prabhupada, and they were all giving a flower to Prabhupada, and Prabhupada was so happy. And he said, all right, you can remain in America. Prabhupada's plan was to take him to India. But then he said, you can remain in America. Because he had fulfilled the dearmost desire of Srila Prabhupada and the dearmost desire of Krishna. So that's a special message for all of you. If you want Krishna's special mercy, somehow or other, bring people to Krishna's lotus feet. So, any questions or comments? Yes, doctor?
And in fact, Maharaj, when you do go out and preach, like either you distribute a book or you're doing house programs or you're preaching somewhere in the class, like, you do feel that blessing.
Yeah, you feel special ecstasy. I mean, when I used to do book distribution as a young brahmachari, it was so ecstatic. We would do 12 hours a day of book distribution. And we'd come back, we couldn't take rest at night. We were just shaking in ecstasy and reading Krishna book, listening to Srila Prabhupada's classes on tapes. It was a very blissful time. But if you simply sit and chant, how long will it take you to be Krishna conscious? And, you know, Prabhupada said we want devotees who are like fighters, not sit-down devotees. Not fighting each other like you do here. That Prabhupada didn't want. But we want people who are like Arjuna, Prabhupada said, going out and conquering. It's a missionary movement. That spirit should be instilled in all of us to go out and bring people to Krishna's lotus feet. I mean, just like we were recently in Nandi, and there's so many new devotees, so pleasing. So many new devotees. And the nice thing here in Fiji is when you make a new devotee has family members, and the family members become Krishna conscious too. In America, it doesn't work like that. When you make someone a devotee, family members don't get along with each other, so they just reject him. But in this culture, when you make someone a devotee, well, the mother eventually becomes like Gokul's mother, grandmother, great-great-great-grandmother, actually so many generations. No children yet, but anyway, so they all become devotees. It's amazing, isn't it? So that we have a special opportunity here to, and actually the big challenge is to make people, the native culture, the Fijian people, devotees too. It's not that we should be racist and just be thinking, you know, just some people can become devotees. It's like I mentioned, the Jewish people think that they're chosen people, that they're the only ones who can go back to Godhead. Did you know that? That's actually ingrained in the philosophy of Jewish people, that you have to be born, have a Jewish mother, and then you're chosen by God. You can be a nonsense demon the whole life, but you go back to Godhead because you're born in the right family. It's like the Brahminical thing in India, isn't it? Like if you're a Sharma or a Trivedi, then automatically, you know, you're spiritually elevated. So we shouldn't be racist, chauvinist, and also chauvinism we should throw away. You know, men and women, equal. Like Prabhupada said, when a lady becomes Krishna conscious, her brain grows, and she becomes better devotee than men. So we don't want chauvinism, racism, speciesism, any of this stuff. Everybody has an opportunity to be Krishna conscious and preach Krishna consciousness. So any other questions or comments? You have about 1 minute. Yes, Doctor.
And we should be holding ourselves back in engaging and then preaching or Krishna service or in temple service. Because if we're doing so, then we're losing us.
Yeah. We shouldn't hold it. And we should empower people too. Mm-hmm. Like, when I joined the movement, people after 6 months in the movement, they were going out and preaching and making new devotees. I mean, I was opening up preaching centers after 6 months in the movement. After 6 months in the movement, I was giving Sunday feast lecture. We don't want to put a glass ceiling on people. There's opportunities for everyone. There's a whole world. There's a whole world out there. And then also we have to adapt Krishna consciousness according to different cultures. I mean, let's say if we're preaching to the Fijian people, we have to adapt the presentation. Music can be a little bit different. The food can be, you know, vegetarian food can be a little different. I mean, that's how you attract people, by cultural presentation, giving them something they're comfortable with. If you want people to make a change in life, they do it with small steps, not big steps. You understand? That's how changes are made. It's called baby steps. You can't expect someone one day to just like... I mean, of course, in the 1960s, it worked like that because we were all hippies. But, shave their heads, put on robes, and, you know, just do everything differently. Just like in America, we have this program called Krishna West. I don't know, some of you may have heard about it. It's on the internet. And it's to present Krishna consciousness to the Western people. You know, so in the beginning, you know, no dhotis or saris. Just very, very simple chanting of Hare Krishna, Bhagavad Gita philosophy, basic. Siddhanta is the same. But so the people feel more attracted. That's very important. Okay, I think we have to end now. Thank you very much. All glories to His divine grace. Srila Prabhupada.